Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to a live interview tonight on Prophecy Keepers Radio. When the host says the coast is clear, please call in. This is Jasa Sagonie, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, we are live. We've got a really special guest. Before I introduce Lori, let me give you a little bit of background. Back in, I guess we're going back to about 92, 93, something like that, when I first became aware of her maps. I was in my first, five, six, 7 years of walking the Red Road. And I was down at an Nippy Lodge, Sweat Lodge at White Eagle Neal's place, and I met Professor a guy that who was a Brigham Young University professor, Avra Migliotti, and another lady, and we were talking about the Earth changes. And. And this one lady said, "Oh yeah, I've seen that maps." And she says, "My father has seen the Earth changes and even more detail. And he knows exactly, what the water levels are going to be." And interestingly, Mad Bear when he back in 72, there was a big gathering of nations in South Jordan Park in Utah. And I know the person that drove him from New York. And as you're approaching Salt Lake from the east, there's a place called Parley's Canyon, and you can just begin to see the valley floor. And now this was a guy who had a reputation of literally traveling without his suitcase. That's another story I don't want to go into right now. But he was a quite a seer, and he made my friend stop. He says, "Hold on, let's pull the car over." And he got out and looked around and shook his head. And when he got back in the car, my friend asked him, what's wrong? He says, "Oh, it's too bad." "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Oh, he says that entire valley is going to be flooded someday." And on the way to South Jordan, she drove him around town a little bit, and he pointed at, he said, "Oh, you see that building there with the gold statue on top?" You know, talking about the Mormon temple. He said, "The water is going to come all the way up to that statue." And now that's the old level of Lake Bonneville. And and you can see the remnants of the beach of Lake Bonneville up on the sides of the mountains there. And Orson Scott Card wrote a fiction book called The Folk of the Fringe. And it was around this whole theme of the future flooding of the Salt Lake Valley and people living on the fringes. And he even talked about people hiring out to take scuba tours of the Salt Lake Temple and everything. So yeah, all pretty far fetched, but I'll tell you, there's been so much information. I've got some personal information. Lori's got a ton. She's kind of the person that started this whole ball rolling. Want to welcome Lori Adele Toy. For 20 years, her prophetic wisdom and insight has led this contemporary Earth Change movement and explored its relationship to human consciousness. Her work continues to enlighten and inform all those who seek the truth as to the spiritual, cultural, social, and climatic breakdown that we're experiencing due to what's happening now on our planet. Hello, Lori Toy. How are you?
Hi, Otter. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show, and it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it is. And of course, we've got, as I was telling you before, we have our little a gauntlet we put our guests through. We're going to give you your Mayan birthday reading, and I'll turn you over to Mark, and we're working on your getting your sound ready for your totem sound, which we do for all our guests anyway. So, Mark, what do you think?
Well. First, I'll give Lori her reading in the traditional Mayan day count.
And oh, there's the badge.
That her birth occurs on a day called 7-Ix, or 7-Jaguar. Mm. She has jaguar energy, and jaguar is considered probably the most powerful totem animal in South America and Central America. It does have a connection to her other totem animal that we'll talk about later. There is actually a relationship between them and Quetzalcoatl. They're both these totems are connected back to him. Now, her 7-Ix or 7-Jaguar, the number 7 carries the energy to catalyze things. It's considered a kind of a centering number of the 13-day numbers, but it's also a number that involves kind of a concept of like a final testing. So it's the jaguar energy is a little bit more, just like most cultures, cat, more feminine type energy. The number 7 on it also has a tendency to be a in the center, kind of reflect both in white, so both light and dark, so kind of going back and forth like a mirror between the other 13 numbers. It carries some energy for purpose and future goals, so that might fit in with some of her current and past work. And then the more on the kind of the Jaguar energy, it has kind of considered like spirit protection of the plains, spiritual plains and mountains, especially mountains, so she might like to be in mountains a lot. It's considered to be kind of a things associated with more developed states of consciousness. So things like that give you a rough idea. So it's good. It's also considered an air thing in the medicine wheel that have four jaguars in the position of the four directions. And that probably, this aspect is probably going to connect into Lori's work with the positioning of the golden vortexes on the golden cities, I think. Now, switching gears a little bit, we'll now look at an expanded Zolk'in that I have and look at her birth from that perspective. It's going to have three different perspectives to it. A forward flow of time. This is kind of a counterclockwise energy. A forward or backward flow of time, which is going to be operating in the future, and it's more of a clockwise energy. And where the two together and create a doorway, a bridge, or a zero point and merge with each other. So we'll do the first one first, which is moving forward in time. And it's a day called Ten Eek. This connects to Blue Water, not a direct hit, but pretty close, because Blue Water is Nine Eek. So this is the next Eek after Nine Eek, Ten Eek. And Ten Eek carries the energy of the T-cross of Quetzalcoatl, or the Lord of the Wind and the Water. And it's about sharing things to do with breath, a lot about spirit and prayer, and also oneness. You know, in Mayan, it's in Lakesh, or Lakota Somatakiesan. You know, all are related, this oneness. So this may be an aspect that's been with Lori, you know, since birth. Either something she already had a lot of skill with, or something that she, you know, picked up along the way. But it has a purpose. It has some energy that goes along with it. It's kind of a partnering energy, and it's Simi, which is carries the energies of death, transformation, and divine changes. That seems to certainly go along with her work with the maps and such. This Eek day is the 10th day of the Eagle cycle, so it's Eagle energy. It would be the thus it would be the northern hemisphere, and would connect into visions, but also mind, thinking, rational thoughts. So she probably has some ability here to combine spirit, prayer, but also switch to the other side defense and use the logical, rational mind as well. So that's kind of in a nutshell, you know, the forward flow. Now we'll swing over and look at the backward flow. And this is energy coming from our coming next world cycle, perhaps when, you know, some of Lori's work becomes more well-known or active, that some of her prophetic things come to pass, then she has an energy over there called Two Men or Two Eagle. So there's some more eagle energy there. And it's about, you know, like what we've been talking about, the mind, vision, revelations, things in here about polar things, polarity and the poles themselves and challenges associated with it. But it brings in here, it's in the Jaguar cycle. So that connects to what we were talking about earlier with the Jaguar. And so this is connecting two things together. And it's bringing in some energy here of ancestors dealing with illusion and supernatural power. So these aspects would be things that may have been showing up a little bit more, you know, recently here in her life in the last, you know, 2 to 10 years or so. Those type of things she may have seen start gaining in intensity in her life and things just showing up related to that. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's maybe had continuing things on visions and revelations, but things, maybe something coming in here that has to do with connecting things back to ancestors and native wisdom and stuff like that, showing up more and more and more and getting stronger, and having to do with getting things started or getting things birthed, the birth of things. That's what I see here. So these two come together and form that center point or zero point or balancing point. And that energy is this thing called 12 peace. So it is, and it's connected back to this thing that probably has been driving her since birth about oneness, things getting together. But it has the peace as its predominant aspect of it. And it has a thing about existing, teaching childlikeness, peace, hope, communal tone of cooperation. So things about community and people cooperating and stuff, but they're cooperating with under will, purpose, and discipline. So, you know, it has those aspects to it. So those type of things sort of represent how Lori moves between the worlds, the thing, her ability, what gets her through it, but also what she can contribute as she's getting moving through it, what she can contribute and help others with. So a lot here about peace, hope, community, cooperation, purpose, discipline, and things like that. And it has some behind that as an even bigger amount of energy is oneness and then artistic creation of things, grace, beauty, artistic stuff, you know, would be maybe showing up as well in some way.
Well, how about that? Interesting. Oh, what are we here? A hummingbird has an amazing sound when you get close. Of course, before the show, we asked Lori about her totem. And, we'll let her tell that story and a little bit later on. But, want to invoke all that energy of the jaguar and badger and the hummingbird and the eagle and before we even got started with calling all the ancestors and from all the directions. Well, Mark, you ready to turn Lori loose now? You think she's been properly instructed?
I think she's probably doing fine.
Oh, I'm sure she knows a lot more about herself than we do. So welcome, Lori. Let me ask you a quick question. Are you a fan, by any chance, of the TV show Royal Pains?
My husband watches that. He loves it. I haven't watched it yet, but I assume that you must like it.
Well, the reason why I bring it up is there was the plot against the doctor's benefactor there. His cousin tried to kill him, and it was all over, you know, Saint-Germain and the story that he used to tell him when he was little. And he went. They were both very wealthy, and he eventually went mad and ended up, you know, killing another cousin. But we're going to be talking about Saint-Germain tonight, and I'm sure, or you know, maybe not. This is your show. I'm making some assumptions, but you've got, yeah. Tell us about your path and your new book, and bring us up to date.
Well, gosh, it's hard to say just where to start, but I think for the listeners, I just need to sort of introduce how I even got involved in spiritual work at all, because I come, Otter, from such a conventional, traditional background. I was raised in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church.
And oh, you too.
doesn't get too much more traditional than that, okay?
Augustana, so, my grandmother was Augustana, so that's... Yeah,
okay.
I got you.
Okay. So we're on the same plane there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was 22 years old, and I was working as a sales manager for a local weekly paper in a little town called Sequim, Washington, which is on the Olympic Peninsula near Seattle. and I was called to pick up an ad at a health food store. So I drove out there, walked in the door, and the woman who owned the store stood at the counter and pointed her finger at me and said, "You have work to do for Master Saint Germain." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Who is Saint Germain?" And she said, "Here, I'd like to, come with me. I'd like to show you his picture." So I followed her to the back of her store, to her office, and on the wall hung a picture of the Comte de Saint Germain. And when I saw his picture, Otter, I honestly thought, this is someone I have known before, even though there wasn't any reason why I would, because it was obviously from a different period altogether. It was during the French Revolution. He was definitely an aristocrat, but there was something about it. There was a vibration. There was an energy that really drew me to him. So I said, "Okay, I'd like to know who he is." And she said, "Well, Saint Germain is an ascended master." And came my next question. I said, "Well, what's an ascended master?" Then she explained to me that there are these beings who were people just like you or I and have evolved their energy to a level of experience where they no longer require to be reincarnated into the physical plane. And through that process, because they have risen their energy to fourth, fifth, and sometimes even to sixth dimension and beyond, what the Hindus call lokas, or levels of spiritual experience, that they also pledge to help protect humanity, and that they will actually at times come in to the earth plane, either in a physical body or through consciousness, whatever medium that they want to use, because they are not limited by time or space. And so, of course, when I began to understand this, I was very intrigued. I said, "Well, I want to learn more." And she gave me a pamphlet about Ascended Master teaching. And through that process, she became my first teacher of the Ascended Master tradition. It was a very profound time for me.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, just to be introduced to something like that. And not something that was ordinary. She became my first teacher. I started with meditation, began to read a lot of their biographies. I was extremely intrigued by their stories of love, of beauty, even the dark ones, betrayal and sorrow, and realized that these were indeed archetypes of evolution, and that there was something contained within this whole teaching that appealed to me very deeply. And fast forward a few years, of course, during this time period, I constantly asked, "Can I be of service in some way? Can I serve you in some way?" Maybe that was as Mark was doing the reading, my quest for oneness, even at a younger age. I just wanted to serve at some higher level. And then one night, I was awakened. And at that time, I was living in Idaho. And we had returned to my husband's family farm. And I could smell ozone or sharp oxygen in the room. And I thought, "Oh my gosh, I must have left the window open. There must have been a thunderstorm." So I sat up in bed, and then at the foot of my bed, I saw the Master Saint Germain. And his aura was amazing. It just crackled and effervesced with what I later discovered was a violet flame, but there were these violet stars that just surrounded him. It was really an amazing experience. And so I thought, I must still be dreaming. And so I sat up in bed, and I kind of waved my arm through his image, and he vanished. And so I didn't think, too much more about that. I thought I must have just been dreaming. But it was shortly after that experience, that appearance, that then I began to have dreams. And in this dream, four beings in white robes presented a map of the United States. But it wasn't your typical Rand McNally map. This map was a map of the United States with massive changes to the coastlines. And alongside that, which was the most fascinating aspect to me, it exuded an energy, and this energy was really high. It was like almost like a very high frequency. And I knew when I woke from this dream that something inordinate had happened to me. So I called a good friend who we had a spiritual group together, and I explained to her what had happened, and she said, well, you know, Lori, it's always been prophesied that the Earth will go through a great change, such as maybe you saw on this map. But she also said it is also prophesied that during and after these great changes that we will enter into a new time of higher energy, like a golden age. So at that time, I was a mother of three small children, and there wasn't any way that I was going to go out and market myself as a spiritual teacher or as a prophet, for that matter. And it's kind of, that was something that really went on the back burner. But 5 years later, I went through a very painful divorce, and I returned to the teachings in order to deal with my stress. And I was at a meditation class, and the teacher that was leading this, you know, went after we had done a group meditation, then she was questioning each of us individually and wanted to know, you know, what we had felt from, you know, the meditation we had just done. And when she got to me, I explained to her that I had teachers that surrounded me and gave me instruction and told me, you know, what to do and kind of helped my whole process of whatever I was doing in meditation. And her mouth just dropped open, and she looked at me. She says, oh, well, you must be a channel. And I said, a channel? Because at that time, Otter, I had no idea what a channel was. I didn't know. And so after that class, a good friend who had come to the class with me, he said, let's grab a cup of coffee. I want to talk with you. And in that conversation, he said, well, you know, Lori, since it's so easy for you when you get into this meditative state that there are teachers around you, and I'd also told him about this dream of the map, he said, perhaps we could contact them and see if they will give us more information about the map. Now, my spiritual partner, who's in the book, A Teacher Appears, Dan, was a student of Edgar Cayce, and he was fascinated with earth changes. And so we agreed to meet in the early morning hours, and so he worked at an advertising agency. I was a graphic designer. And so we decided, well, 4:30 would work because I had my daughter with me and had to get her into kindergarten. And anyway, so we met at 4:30 in the morning and began these sessions with the master teachers. And in the beginning, it was very slow and almost obtuse because here he was with his handheld tape recorder, and I would be repeating these words that I would see in meditation, and then the master teachers would appear, and then they would also then relay information. So there was just sort of this, I wasn't fully integrated yet into the channeling process. But in A Teacher Appears, when it first opens up with the first lesson, that's about the time when the integration process had took over, and I began to find my voice for the spiritual teachers.
It's quite a private process the universe drags you through, isn't it? Yeah. So
It never fails to fascinate me. I must say that.
Yeah. If I've been widowed twice, and my second wife's theory was, you know, everybody complains about how hard Earth life is, and she says, "Hey," and she'd really been through it. You know, her. She was born during World War II, and her dad was Italian, and she was a White River Cherokee descendant. Her grandmother was a plant woman. And when her dad came to get her after World War II, her cousin, who didn't like Italians, they were, back in those days, Italians were treated about the same way that blacks were in the Ozarks. Oh, well, she done moved now, married somebody else, moved to California, which is a lie. And she went through unbelievable stuff. But she says the only thing that she could think of is that, hey, we signed up for every experience we think that negative or harsh or whatever, because we have something to learn from it. And she says when you start thinking that way,
hey, everything kind of comes into focus, and, you know, you start asking yourself, well, you know, what should I be learning from this? And by the way, if you need to take breaks, you let me know. We've got lots of music here that we could play. If you're like me, you know, you have to make trips to the little room, you know, pretty often. And but yeah, you let me know when you need to take a break.
Of course.
But go ahead. I know. You got dragged through the knot hole.
Yes, and so through that process, we developed the I'm America map. Now, a teacher appears is a series of 51 small lessons that literally I dusted off for almost 20 years. I never published them because at the time, Otter, with the map, of course, which we inevitably organized and published, and more maps followed after that, we felt such an impetus to share that information, the Earth Changes material, because you've got to remember, this is 1989, 1990, we don't have any idea when this is going to happen, but our sense of urgency was compelling. And we felt that there was really no other way to go but to share that information. So we really stayed on that for many, many years. And my sense is that because we did share that information, and so many people then started with their own spiritual practice and applying their own spiritual experience to the whole idea of Earth Changes, that I think that we may have slowed things down. I'm not saying we're out of the woods, and I'm not going to sugarcoat the prophecies by any means, but I also think that maybe we have a little grace.
Uh-huh.
And fingers crossed, I just hope that we may never see these as bad as they are. But I think that there are some indicators that show that we probably are entering perilously into the time of change, that we're like walking on a precipice, we're walking on the edge of that feather,
and
we're getting closer and closer to that time. So now I'm no longer a young mother, I'm now a young grandmother, and I was looking through the material, sharing it with an editor who was helping me with Points of Perception, which is my first book in the Golden City series, and she said, Lori, all this information needs to be published because it's so seminal and foundational to understanding the whole body of work. And because I happen to be a very prolific channel, I'm one of these channels that I can channel for 2 or 3 weeks and produce 2 books. So I decided, you know, I should organize this and actually produce this. And this is the first of a 3-volume set. A Teacher Appears is an introduction to the Ascended Masters of the I'm America teachings. And it's filled with spiritual information, which ranges from the Law of Attraction and techniques for how to work with Law of Attraction, Earth Changes prophecies, and how to clarify our own inner communication and develop our intuition so that we can connect with our own spiritual teachers. But then the second volume, which is After a Teacher Appears, is Sisters of the Flame, which is really a beautiful work. It's about love, emotion, and the spiritual awakening. And then after that is Fields of Light, which is actually more healing techniques and as we lead into the ascension process. But it was also interesting to publish A Teacher Appears, Otter, because it was really something that I wasn't too sure if I really wanted to publish it, because I knew if I published it, that I would also need to share my personal story. And so I've woven my personal story alongside the spiritual teachings, because with A Teacher Appears, it's really 2 stories in one. It's the story of how I awaken spiritually, and then just all of the trial and the tribulation that we went through in raising the funds that were necessary to print the map, the trials and tribulations we had in our personal relationship, and then inevitably in the end, how we break away from one another and go our separate paths, which it's very apparent now, looking back at it now, yes, we were brought together to do this project, to actually be you know, bring the I'm America map forward. But at the time, you don't know that, of course. So I'm just really excited to share it, and I think it's really got some good information in it.
Well, look, before to put everybody in the mood for the rest of this, through the years, I've collected some really cool music. Everybody remembers Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. Hoyt Axton wrote a lot of music. His mom wrote Heartbreak Hotel. And Hoyt wrote a couple of songs, and one of them's called Way Before the Time of Towns. And this was off an album that he put out in the late 70s. It's 3 minutes and 6 seconds. Let me play it for everybody because it'll kind of put things into perspective. And I'll take you guys off of mic while this is playing. Of course, that's where we came from, but we're a long way from that. Here's another one. It's self-explanatory.
poison you can think of. And I'm underneath the streetlight, but the light of joy I know scared beyond belief. Way down in the shadows, and the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face. Common sense is ringing out the bell. No technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
And I'm sure everybody's heard that, but I wanted to throw that in too. We're back with Lori Del Toy and Mark Badger Borchetting. And boy, there's sure a lot of truth to what Leonard Cohen was saying, and he's got a lot of truth to tell. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of breather. I know you. I can sense it. You have a lot of energy running through you when you're telling your story. So, but
yeah, and because you know. A teacher appears, just so you know, Otter, and for listeners, it's my story alongside these teachings that are there to uplift us. Well, I left this work 3 times. The message was so heavy, I wasn't even certain that I could deal with it. And so inevitably, though, as many of us find out, either the hard way or the easy way, that once that spark is lit within you, you just can't turn back. And they had expanded my consciousness to this point that I couldn't deny it. And so inevitably, by the end of the book, I committed myself to the work, to the message, and decided I would share it with others. The I'm America map is it's a very intense message, because when people look at it, they're a little unsure. And I think the message itself for me at that time, I was a little unsure. I wasn't quite certain just how I should work with the material. For instance, at that time, I wasn't even aware really what a prophecy was. And I think it's important to point out that at that time, I thought that there was a probability that this really was going to happen. So we loaded 500 of the maps in the back of my car, and we drove down to California and slept on a lot of living room couches and did living room presentations, stopped at New Age centers, and just shared this information with anyone who was receptive and wanted the material. We must have done probably about 40 presentations of the material. But that was a very profound experience, because through that process, I just became more knowledgeable with the material and how it really, you know, was meant to work. And I came to this conclusion that this information is not carved in stone, that this is information that is being given to us ahead of time so we can make different choices today. And those choices that we make today will indeed change the world that we live in tomorrow. So I Am America, which is my publishing company, our saying is a change of heart can change the world, because really everything about nature is somewhat mirrored or engendered in human consciousness. And I know that that's kind of a very sophisticated metaphysical tenet to wrap your head around. But there's a lot to that. And so that's why, as in Mark's reading, I do always advocate what we can do to ameliorate these types of prophecies. And that is spiritual practice, whatever type that you want to do. I don't advocate just one, but whatever is comfortable for you to do that, because I do think that we have entered, the earth itself has entered to a tipping point. And there may not be too much left that we can do at this point because of climate change and global warming. And I think that that's one thing that we, as the powerful co-creators that we are empowered to do, and that is to pray and to practice at a spiritual level to help ameliorate this type of information. But I think it's very important, too, for the listeners that I go over the I'm America map just so they can get some sort of an idea of what the new coastlines would be like if this were to happen. I think I want to start first with the Pacific Northwest, and there we see Seattle underwater. Spokane, Washington is the new coastline. The new coastline travels down alongside Idaho, and so Washington and Oregon is mostly underwater. Mount Shasta is now a peninsula of land, and then the coastline, and this is interesting because you talked about this in the beginning of your show, Salt Lake City is now underwater. And there's a series of islands that are formed near Salt Lake City. It's probably the mountains that are to the back of the city. The new coastline travels all the way in to Denver, Colorado, and follows Colorado and really slices down the center of Arizona, and Phoenix, Arizona is now a seaport town. Interestingly, San Diego is still above water, but Baja breaks into a series of islands. In the central part of the state, the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers swell to many times their size, almost to the point where it looks like they're going to split the United States in half. And a large bay forms with Dallas, Texas underwater and Houston, Texas underwater. And then New Orleans is also underwater. So you see most of Louisiana and a lot of southeastern Texas is underwater. In the east and the northeast, there is a lot of ice and a lot of wind. And so most of Maine gets covered with ice, and it's very, they say there will be very, very cold temperatures there. And we can get into that later, and I'll explain to you why I think that is so. And New York City is underwater, so is Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of those coastal cities and bays and inlets are all get flooded because they have a lot of high winds and probably what we now know to be storm surges. They're coming in and flooding the East Coast. The rest of it seems fairly okay, except for Florida, and the tip of Florida is also underwater. So that's just kind of a visual for your listeners so they can kind of get an idea. They probably have seen an I'm America map. They've been out for a long time, but I always kind of like to go over that just so you get some sort of an idea of just how drastic these coastlines were.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before Ghost Wolf passed away, you know, the elders came up and stayed with him for a couple of weeks, and Grandfather Martin was with him, and he kind of reached over and poked Wolf in the ribs and says, "Hey, I told him to get out of California." He says, "Why are they still there?" You know. So, and my own story was in 92. Dimitri Dudeman, he was a Romanian customs officer, and he was in charge. Basically, what made his job was to make sure Bibles didn't get into Romania. And long story made short, you know, he ended up helping smuggle them in, and had a message to tell. He came over to the United States, and I went to see him, and shortly thereafter, I went to Creator, and I said, "Look, I said, I need to have a conversation with you." And I just, Dimitri had said, you know, it took 16 times for him asking for it, but he finally heard something. And I said, "Father, I'm sitting on the side of this bed. I'm going to relax, but I'm going to be here until I hear from you." And knowing that at that time I was active in the LDS Church, and I knew about the Mormon prophecies, and they know that someday they're going to have to migrate back to the center of the country, but to take a horseshoe-shaped route. So I said, and I knew because I'd been introduced to Rolling Thunder, you know, shortly before that, and some of the other traditional elders, I know you never go without a question. So I said, "Why is it that Joseph Smith told the Mormons that they're going to have to migrate back to Missouri, but in a horseshoe-shaped route over the closest bridge on the Colorado, which would have been at Moab. And I just relaxed, and about 10, 15 minutes later, my body felt like it was buzzing or vibrating. And a couple of words popped into my head. They didn't come from you know, outside my head, but it's just one of those things. When this happens, you know these thoughts didn't originate in your brain. And the two words were the flood. And I had absolutely no idea, you know, what that was all about. And I followed up on that, and I started looking around, you know, for some clues. And in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson appeared to me in a dream, and he's also done this with you know, Marcin Kuenzer. He asked her to do some artwork around the Great Law, but he just said, when are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy? Well, I knew Gardner was my sixth great-grandfather, and I knew he was Cherokee, and so I, you know, kind of started, you know, moving in that direction, and I didn't know that Mad Bear had passed away that year, and I didn't know that until 2000, or 96, actually, when I finally... I knew who he was. I didn't know what he looked like, but you know, he and I were sitting, you know, cross-legged. There was a table between us. He had a gold chain around his neck with a white translucent stone, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and his name was written in the stone. And I wasn't allowed to remember the name, but he had the pockmarked face. And when I moved to Moab in 96, was in a bookstore, and here's his book. And it was written by the same guy that had written the book about Rolling Thunder. And first thing I did was flip to the back and look at Prophecy, and I realized he was working on the same thing I was working on at the time, which is putting together all the prophecies. And my first wife had passed away, and I just decided I put together 16 pages back and front, and just gave it away and said, hey, you know, anybody wants a copy of this, you know, you're free to do so. If you want to donate or not, it's fine. And 6 months later, I got a letter from Australia. Hey, we want to know more. And then Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who's was the first psychiatrist to really take the whole alien abduction thing seriously, he wrote me a letter and encouraged me, so I got online. But then I had a subsequent dream. Long story made short, I was lifted. I was in Utah, and in the dream I was lifted up in the air, and I was carried over the Great Plains. I had been walking up a set of stairs to a chapel, and the doors to the chapel opened, and water came out over my head, totally washed away everything. And here I'm being carried across the Great Plains toward the east. There's water and puddles everywhere. And you know, years pass, I more or less was homeless for about 15 months. I was just sent on a journey, you know, just before Christmas of 2008. And I spent a few weeks at Talks to White Buffalo's house in Texas that winter. And I told him the story, and he just laughed. And I said, what are you laughing about? He said, what year was that? I said, 92. He said, He said, well, now this guy's a serious Sundancer and Cherokee Ottaway, a protector of the religious tradition. And he said, I was up on Lookout Mountain, you know, just west of Denver. And he says, I saw a wave come across the Great Plains. And he says, Denver was like flushed, like a flushing a toilet. And
wow.
So, you know, over the years, and then...
Which matches the I'm America map to some degree.
Well, yeah, and then the month that I was contemplating, Voc Rehab put me into grad school. wasn't able to stay in, so I went trucking. And that didn't work out either. My wife got sick. We both had to get off the road. And so I had to do something, and I had it in the back of my mind to start up this show. And so I hadn't yet met Ghost Wolf, and I was reading about the prophecy where the elders had said that once they called Hale Bob the twins, they said once
right.
the twins that had passed for, to where he couldn't see him anymore, so after 7 years passed, which would take it up right about to that very month. It was that month that I was reading it, and I realized, oh my gosh. Well, what they said was is that the red kachina would be discovered when the blue kachina was in the sky, but it would take a microscope or a telescope to find it. So immediately I got on space.com and put the words red star in, and lo and behold, just 2 weeks previous, a red dwarf star had accidentally been discovered 10 light years from Earth. And if you go to prophecykeepers.com, you can read some of the details. Well, and then I accidentally ran across looking into the third prophecy of Fatima, which was supposed to have been revealed in, in the mid-80s, Pope John Paul was buttonholed by some faithful followers in Germany, and they said, "Come, this is supposed to have been revealed." And I've got the exact quotes at the front page of prophecykeepers.com, and more or less what he said was, well, he said, if the world knew that in the blink of an eye, entire continents could be overswept by oceans or sheets of ice, and millions of people would die in the blink of an eye, that's not so much something that should probably be published. And they associated this whole thing with the coming of a star. So
yes,
I've heard
a lot of those prophecies as well, and
yeah.
And talked about that with friends. And the conjecture is that is possibly all Pacific Plate, which is a large tectonic plate that rises and falls. And in my book Divine Destiny, which is my third book in the Golden City trilogy, I actually it's fascinating, Otter, because I was given a map of America the way that it looked before it looks now.
Well, there was a NASA employee that, and I've got the recording here. He said, basically, back in the 60s, Popular Mechanics, 64, Popular Mechanics magazine was saying, hey, this is coming, and it's going to be here in about 50 years, and here we are. And they're talking about tsunamis and destruction worldwide. And
well, civilizations have risen and fallen many times.
Yeah,
Mu,
that's right.
Lemuria, Amaru, Atlantis. Atlantis had three different series, is what esoteric historians theorize. So it's happened before, it can happen again.
Yep.
Well, one of the things, too, is just about, a week ago or so, just recently, they came out with a story and said, the largest volcano on Earth has been discovered underneath the Pacific Ocean.
Oh,
I saw
boy.
That, Mark. I blogged it on my Earth Changes
blog. It's as big as the New Mexico.
Oh, that's
wow.
Not good. And there was one other guy that had a vision. He moved up to Durango, Colorado because of it, because he lived down on the coast. See, I was second, third, fourth, fifth grade. I was in Santa Monica, and I was dreaming about tsunamis then. And he said, whatever happens, he said, whatever's going to hit the West Coast, he says, it's going to come at such a velocity, he says, drops of water are going to go right through people like machine gun bullets. And he says, it's really, so he says, it scared the hell out of him. And so, the Hopi elders just said, we need to get up in the mountains and forest. And, that indicates a certain elevation. You need to be up, out of harm's way. And, and then you're Christians. Oh, well, God said in the Bible there's never going to be a flood again. Well, there's a problem with that. What he actually said was he would never again use water to destroy all life on Earth. And he used it against Pharaoh during the Exodus. And, you know, he's reserved the right, you know, to destroy any nation or nations that, you know, and I mean, look what's going on in the world today. And, you know, it might be a time for a chastening. Now, I just got back from Green Corn Festival 3 weeks ago, and I saw an old friend of mine. He's the eighth carrier of Sitting Bull's Pipe, and he was the first teacher to get up, and he said, "We've got 3 years." And you're not supposed to interrupt somebody that's teaching, you know, at a social fire. I just had to stand up. I said, "How did you know that?" I said, "I've known that since 1977. I said, just as I was joining the LDS Church, I said, "You know, hey, you know, how long have we got?" And that night I had a dream that I saw the face of a clock, and I saw a brilliant flash of red light, and the hands of the clock melted, and the number 16 flashed. And then here, you know, about three years ago, I became familiar with Daniel's timeline. So, you know, time's short. You know, people just, they need to get ready. And
yeah.
There's no reason to fear about it. And, you know, if you're prepared spiritually or whatever, and I'm just crazy enough to want to hang around and see the aftermath, and to help put things together. And I've got some ideas, And they center around the concept of in the book of Acts, they call it all things in common. It's just the way the Indians lived, but you know, it's the first thing the U.S. government did when they tore the Indian nations apart and a lot of their lands and they weren't allowed to hold things in common and basically were acculturated. So yeah, time's short.
Well, time is short, and, you know, in a teacher appears, I just wanted to kind of get back to some of these prophecies because I think that they'll mirror a lot of other ones that you've, you know, experienced yourself personally and also been taught. We kept on hammering the master teachers for dates. We thought, well, if this is going to happen, when is it going to happen? We need to know. And, you know, what we quickly found out is that these spiritual teachers, they don't deal with time the same way that we deal with time. So they began to teach us about what is known as a reference point. And they said that a reference point is a position in the landscape of the ever-present now where one can evaluate or weigh probability. And so by definition then, a reference point is placed so we can then initiate a comparison between actual events, prophesied events, and then the possibility of their timing. And so we started then to ask them, well, then what are these reference things that we should look for? What are the points? What are these, events that we should be looking for? Because if we follow a timeline, that almost never comes about. And so they said, well, to look for first changes in the economy, first in the United States economy, we have a total downturn, then that would affect the whole international or worldwide economy. Then secondly, they said, look for overall global warming. And we're there right now. Those two things are actually happening right now. Then they said, the third event could be twofold, and it could play out a couple of different ways. First, because of the overall global warming, that would place a lot of excess pressure on tectonic plates. And I don't think people really understand this, because when you have a lot of water on our planet and it's spinning, this actually affects the rate of spin of the Earth. And so they said that could actually affect tectonic plates and put pressure on and cause worldwide earthquakes. But the other thing that they talked about was a possible meteor, asteroid, coming towards the Earth that would impact in North America, and that this too would affect tectonic plates and cause worldwide earthquake.
The Rolling Thunder taught that also.
Yes, so these are all possibilities and probabilities, reference points. Now, I don't know if you're too familiar with James Balog and his work in his, he's a photographer for National Geographic, and he came out with a documentary called Chasing Ice. And he started to, yeah, it's really profound and a really beautiful film, really well worth watching. And he began to photograph icebergs and ice, and he put a marking point down where he had been and returned later and noticed the icebergs really are melting. And because he also had a background in the sciences, he didn't really accept the whole idea that we were in global warming. So when he saw this with his own eyes and took these pictures and saw that the icebergs were indeed melting, he raised a ton of money and went out and set out time-release cameras throughout Iceland, Greenland, Alaska, and began to take time-lapse photography and came to the conclusion that ice is basically the canary in the coal mine. And because small icebergs are susceptible first, that larger ice masses take a much longer time, and that Greenland really started melting about 20 years ago. And
oh,
so he basically...
It's gotten to the point where the indigenous Greenlanders are... Their trees are starting to grow again there. They're starting to build their lodges again, but you know, this whole warming thing, it's not just Earth. When it was first announced, if you put in global warming and you look at the very earliest hints of this back in the early 90s, the entire solar system, just about every body in the solar system was warming, not just us. So something's going on.
Well, it's very fascinating if you watch what he has to say, because, of course, they do a lot of ice core sampling. And what he says is that basically Earth has a fever. The Earth right now is really in trouble. And they've taken these ice core samples, and this is what they've found out, that Earth has a climate rhythm, and nature naturally cycles up to 280 parts per million of CO2. And this has happened several times in the last 400,000 years, what they've been able to find out. But now we're dangerously cycling up to 385 parts per million, and that's a 2009 figure that I'm giving you. And this, when this cycle of carbon dioxide goes up, so do temperatures and sea levels. Now we've got climate change. So he says that we're way outside the natural variability, and that's why today 95% of all the world's glaciers are melting.
Well, yeah, last year the Mississippi River.
And all these politicians want to make this a political issue, and it's not.
NOAA's Mary Summerrain's teacher, she said winter and summer all mixed up, and you know, one year the Mississippi River almost dries up, then it floods the next year, and you know, people are getting washed off the mountain about 9 miles west of where Mark is right now, and it's just total weather chaos, and it's worldwide, and it's not getting of
the climate, and these are actually prophecies that were shared with us in. Around the mid-90s, we began to ask the master teachers more, you know, well, you gave the I'm America map, so what do you think is happening now? Because that was a read of the collective consciousness then. Can you update the material? And so I think they were probably grinning, you know, when we asked these things. Because to them, how do you update a prophecy? Because a prophecy is this completely visual story that's given to you to incite from within your need to change. But anyway, they went ahead, Otter, and they gave us what's known as the six map scenario. And what they are, it's a progression of changes that starts with map number one and then walks you through from best case scenario to worst case scenario, with the six map being the I'm America map, which is the end result. And with every single one of the maps, there's ancillary prophecies that go with all of them. But what is so interesting is with all the prophecies are also all of the spiritual practices that we can do to begin to change these things, to begin
mm-hmm.
to change the facts. And I think that this is a time where it probably would be good for me to segue into one of the most profound parts of the prophecy. I mean, we can go back to more Earth Changes prophecies if you like, because I've got a ton of them here, and I've got updated work if you're interested. But one thing that they did share that I thought was so profound is they began to share these locations of Golden City vortices. And what these are, they are locations on the Earth that are prophesied havens of spiritual safety.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be physically safe. I'm not certain yet if they will be totally all together. I think that there still will be some changes that will happen in them. But I think for more than anything, they are places that are prophesied that we can go to, which will accelerate our spiritual growth and development
mm-hmm.
during and after the time of great change. And basically what they are part of, if you can wrap your head around this, they're part of what would be a Western Shambhala tradition. In Ascended Master teaching, they have this provenance, this story, this tale of Shambhala. And of course, Shambhala is also in Buddhism. And Shambhala is a story of a perfect town and city that was built by the immortals. And they gifted this beautiful city, known as the City of White, to humanity as a place where we could go and actually receive teaching, pure teaching, for those who wanted to accelerate their spiritual growth and evolution and move beyond the third dimension, liberate from the body, move into fourth and fifth dimensional consciousness. Well, that city was built and destroyed three times, and the third time that actually the immortals destroyed the city themselves because it had gotten so corrupted being in the 3D regular world. And so what they did is they surrounded the town with a pile of sandalwood logs, burnt the entire city, and then sent the city up to the ethereal plane. And so that's their whole myth and story about Shambhala. So the Golden Cities, how this relates, is that Shambhala actually, from the ethereal planes, calibrates the energies of the Golden Cities. And there's 51 total throughout the world. There's 5 in the United States, and I'll kind of talk about those locations a little bit. But what's fascinating about them is that they also contain within them, they look like a huge Maltese cross that covers an extensive span of land. They're 270 miles across, so they're big. And they are not located on the coastlines. You will usually find them located in kind of pristine rural areas. And I think that there's an intention with that, because I think that these are probably the future population centers of the Earth during and after the time of great change.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one is located in Arizona and New Mexico. These are the United States ones. The second one is 5 total. The second one is located in Illinois and Indiana. The third one is located in South Carolina and Georgia. The fourth one is located in Idaho and Montana. And then the fifth one is located primarily over Colorado, but also parts of Kansas and some parts of Nebraska. And what they allege is that these areas calibrate their energy not only with Mother Earth, but also with many different spiritual teachers. There's like one major teacher who stewards each Golden City, but also there are certain points within the cities themselves, and they refer to these as adjacent points, and also there's tremendous sacred geometry that is contained within the Golden City. There are 4 doorways, and then there's many, many ley lines that you can access and access their energy. But what they do primarily is they assist us in our ascension process, that is, our own process of transcendence, of spiritual growth and evolution, and our ability, if we so choose, to enter into that ascension process. Now, it is possible, and they say this, that some people may be able to enter the ascension process in this lifetime and achieve it in one lifetime. But I know that I'm probably on the remedial program with that, but and I think that the ascension process is something that we start, and then we continue with it through successive lifetimes. So it is a way that we can actually start a whole initiatory process in spiritual liberation. And what's so fascinating to me is how we get this amazing opportunity for spiritual growth and evolution alongside this time period of such planetary peril and susceptibility. So it's almost as if the Earth changes are sort of instigating and pushing us towards making this choice to actually change how we are going to go about everything in our life, primarily starting at a spiritual level. So that is some of the information, and it's almost as if it shows that there are two worlds that will exist side by side, and there will be this perilous changing Earth. We will live in this culture, this society, alongside spiritual transcendence and the development of compassion and the higher aspects of humanity.
Well, with that,
Lori,
go ahead.
I'd like to. There's something interesting right before the show. I was doing a little bit of reading on these golden cities, and this is going to tie a little bit back into your birth reading. So remember that I said I did two readings for you. One was the Mayan Dzogchen, and one was with an expanded Dzogchen that I'd received years ago. And as I was reading about these golden cities, something really clicked. As especially on in your work, it said on the golden city of Colima, which is the one over Colorado, which is where I'm at. It said that particular city had to deal with balance and harmony.
Yes, they each have
that really struck
quality.
Me. And the reason is there were when I was given 9 symbols that expand the current Mayan Dzogchen into a bigger, larger Dzogchen. And that's when I was doing your reading and I was doing the forward and backward and unity and all that. That's what I was using to do that birth reading. Well, I was, of those 9 symbols, 2 of them, their energy of those symbols were balance and harmony.
Oh, wow. Well, no mistakes ever.
And they're important because I was given day numbers and glyphs. And balance is the first of the new glyphs, and harmony is the last.
It almost begs.
Their color is green.
We have to enter into a harmony. We have to enter into harmony before we can really experience a cooperation.
Now, the other thing that struck me was I looked at the geometry of the energy structure of the around the golden cities. This was also very interesting to me too, because this geometry also matched with what I was given. And so when I was reading through these things on the golden city, I was going, this is pretty interesting. I mean, these things are direct hits. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. They're just wham, they're there. So as I was reading it, and it reminded me of something a while back that said that what I was given was kind of like a, I don't know, the way we conceptualize it, it's almost like a software program. So the programming of a sequencing and programming for, and it was that would it would go in and it was interacting with the magnetic fields, the ley lines, all this geometry, right? Which would be more of the sort of crystalline computer type of thing in that analogy, right? So these things, this what I was given, which is what I did your birth reading was, is literally sort of the new Dzogchen or frequency harmonics for possibly maybe these how these golden cities, they may be operating under that possibly in some way. It's what was coming to me as I was reading through this, and I saw these just direct hits one after another, and that was pretty interesting to me, because I got to be honest, I read your work earlier, and I thought, well, this is kind of interesting, but, you know, it really didn't sink in. But
right,
when I saw these direct
the
hits, like,
to translate it to us so it has meaning for us.
So, yeah, so this has gotten a lot more of my interest when that happened to me. And for you, it connects back to, in your reading, I'll go back to the part where I mentioned the two time flows coming together. And in your birth reading there, it was a 12th piece. And that has the aspect of peace, community, cooperation, and that oneness again. And it's also sitting on a very specific number that has sacred geometry associated with it, too. And its color is green, and it's one of the new glyphs, too. And that would connect into, for you, and it would connect into the green in the heart chakra center. And I believe that is also, that particular energy is also going to be associated with Kalima.
That's really fascinating, because early on in my work in the early 90s, in Ascended Master teachings, they talk a lot about ray forces. And they get in sometimes into numbering systems and that kind of stuff, and you kind of want to throw that all away because it's all in out confusing. But what they do talk about are these colors as spectrums and as octaves. And so they identify these rays as a perceptible sound and light frequency that identify with a certain color, and often they also have a sound as well. And early on, our teacher, of course, was Master Saint Germain, and he said that I vibrated specifically to the green ray.
Well, let me share something else for you from the Mayan tradition and the Mayan Popol Vuh, because this is related. When they speak about the changes going from one world cycle to the next, they have a couple prayers in there. And they do not mention any of the other colors of the medicine wheel, except for one. And so you're familiar with the colors of medicine wheel, right? Red, white, black, or blue, and yellow, right?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of different systems. You know, I don't know exactly, you know, how it fits in with what I know, but I know that there are a lot of different systems.
In the Mayan tradition, the center of the medicine wheel is green. And in those prayers, in the Popol Vuh, as they're moving from one world cycle to the next and going through darkness, all the other stuff that's going on, I mean, they don't even know where the sun's going to come up at. They're so confused. They don't even know if it's going to come back. And that there's only one thing they pray, and that's for the green road or the green path.
And
so
in the Ascended Master teaching,
yeah,
the green ray is the ray or energy of science and ministration to humanity.
Yeah. Now also, there's some work, and they measured the frequency that's coming out of the top of a pyramid, which would be on your golden cities. You have four tetrahedrons, and then
right.
You got an octahedron or a pyramid sitting on top of it.
Right, which represents third dimension, fourth dimension, and fifth dimension simultaneously working together.
If you went to that top of the pyramid, and I think it was some Russians that did this work, and you go to a pyramid and you measure the frequency that's emitted out of the capstone of the pyramid, it's going to be green.
That's fascinating.
It's in a book. There's a book you might like. It's a little bit technical. It's called Life Force, the Scientific Basis by Claude Swanson. It's a very interesting book. It's pretty big and has a lot of charts, a lot of stuff in it, and it goes over some of this information. And it may also help you bridge the gap between some of this scientific stuff and some of the other spiritual aspects of rays and stuff and bridge those two worlds together.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. Always looking for new resources.
I've given that particular book to a couple people or talked to them about it, and they went out and got it, and they, so far, almost everybody has absolutely loved it. Unfortunately, the book's almost doubled in price now.
That has
it's hard to get.
Happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think that may help you a little bit, too, with understanding, you know, some of the natures and some of the aspects of these golden cities. And I also believe that they're going to, I don't know exactly how, are you familiar with the Hopi, the two twins?
Oh, the two poles, the pole stars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that,
I'm not real
those...
familiar with the language behind it, but I've read the story, and it's kind of an amazing analogy.
Yeah, I think that those are going to interact as well. And you can look at those as symbolism, too, of other things, such as, say, the torsion fields for the planet, or which would include the magnetic fields. And I suspect that the geometry of your golden cities is going to interact with those torsion fields because they are those. Each of those golden cities are going to have their own torsion field vortex system.
Yes,
and they're going to interlock with.
Yeah, and energy within themselves. You know, they spin in a clockwise motion when they're taking energy in, and then they go counterclockwise when they're actually removing toxins out of the collective consciousness of the Earth. And they have a flux of about 40 miles. So before you enter one, you may feel it, you know, even up to 40 miles before you enter into it. It just depends on, you know, because they do vary on a day-by-day basis. They operate almost like chakras would on the human body. They operate on the planet. And it's very interesting because there's many vortex seekers now. They love to travel to these and actually feel the different points because our spiritual practice and our prayer and our meditation is actually amplified in golden cities and at certain points. And one of the most important points in a golden city is the star, which is the center, which you were just talking about, you know, as the green field. And that also is 40 miles in diameter. And that's where all of the four doorways coalesce. And so the energy is very intense in those areas. And people love to go to them because they feel they can feel the ray force, that they can feel the energy, and they feel their oneness with the Earth.
Hey, Lori. Do you remember Lori Lockwood? She was with you and Ghost Wolf in Indiana.
I don't.
She's on the line.
I do remember being with Wolf Indiana, something like that.
Say hello, Lori. Or say hello.
Hey, Lori.
This is Janine, not Lori. Janine Lockwood.
Oh, I'm sorry, Janine Lockwood. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Lori, we were opening the Eastern Door in Indiana and at Marita Pickett's with Ghost Wolf.
That's right, and it was in Indiana.
Yeah, we were at the Pickett Farm, and Ghost Wolf was there, and I honestly think that he's helping with this project. You know, he's one of the masters helping to bring this.
I'm going to tell you a story a little bit later.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say. You know, I just wanted to let you guys realize that we were all together opening up one of these doors.
I remember that.
Okay.
I think that was like 1994, 1995, around in there.
Yeah, I can't remember. 1995, yeah, around that time. We opened up the first door. We grounded the energy for the first door to open up for the first
time. I remember that.
Yeah,
well,
that was
awesome.
Yeah.
Right
okay,
after.
That's all I wanted to say. Hi.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Shortly after Wolf passed away, my wife woke up from a dream, and I can always tell she, you know, my second wife, I married my first wife's best friend, and this was 2005, 2006, something like that, and she always, she'd wake up and she'd go, you know, and I'd say, okay, what'd you dream about? She says, I just saw Ghost Wolf in a dream, and she said he was with a bunch of other chiefs. She says, you know that famous picture of that Indian chief who was frozen in the snow? You know, I said, well, you're talking about Chief Bigfoot. You know, he's killed at Wounded Knee. I said, okay. And she says, yeah. And she said he was there. Rolling Thunder was there. And I said, honey, I said, I don't know whether you realize this or not. It's a little known fact that the Hopi elders, they called Robert Ghost Wolf Chief because he had run a ghost dance. And I said, so had Bigfoot, so had Rolling Thunder. And she says, well, she says they were all planning something. You know,
they're
all
planning.
Yeah, and so they definitely are, and that gave me the impetus to I put up a website at originalghostdance.com, and you can see clips from Billy Jack. See, Wovoka's grandson was on the cast and crew, and the actual ghost dance was a helicopter took off. And actually showed how the ghost dance worked. It's a spiral dance, and it's something to behold, and it's something that's a physicist would understand what was going on with it. But yet you're right, Ghost Wolf's out there, and he's part of what's going on behind the scenes with the Masters. Definitely. I mean, the day he passed away, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. You know, he was told to stay home, but he hadn't seen his daughter in years. And he hopped in his four-wheeler, took off for the coast, went and visited her. And he was sitting on the edge of a bed, and he said, you know, he had had a really bad attack, high blood pressure attack the previous August that laid him low. You know, he almost died then, and then the elders came up, got him back on his feet. But he asked for some aspirin, and then she heard a clap of thunder, and out of a clear sky, and walked back into the room, and he was laying back right exactly where he had been sitting, and the thunder beam had come to get him.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was thunder.
Yeah. That tree checks.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I think I'm related to you. You said Green and Gardner, and I just had a DNA test, and those names are coming up, and they're going to the Cherokee tribe. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
so,
hey,
hello, cousin.
Hey, OCO Oginalee, that's hello, cousin. Visit CherokeeDiscovery.com. We're the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. We're federally recognized in Mexico. We'd love to have you in. We don't turn anybody away. You're family, and so.
Okay.
But thanks for calling in.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, Lori.
Yeah. Thanks, Denise.
Uh-huh.
Bye bye. Bye bye. Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, I do remember that ceremony. I'd forgotten about that, but yeah, we at that point we were working to access many of the Golden City vortices through their doorways, and working at a human level to activate them and gain more knowledge of what they could do for us.
Well, do you want to take a little 5-minute break?
Sure, that sounds good. And if you want me to share some updated Earth Changes prophecies, I'd be glad to do that for your listeners.
Sure, sure. I've Gordon Lightfoot wrote a lot of music, and he did some that were just about prophetic. And this is called The Pride of Man. And we'll do this. We'll take about 5 minutes, and then we'll come back. But this is The Pride of Man by Gordon Lightfoot.
Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Can't you see that flash of fire 10 times brighter than the day? And behold, a mighty city broken in the dust again. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around and go back down, back the way you came. Babylon is laid to waste, Egypt's buried in her shame. Their mighty men are beaten down, the kings have fallen in the ways. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around and go back down, back the way you came. Terror is on every side, though the leaders are dismayed. Those who put their faith in fire the faith shall be repaid. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Shout a warning to the nations that the sword of God is raised on Babylon, that mighty city, rich in treasure, wide in fame. It shall cause thy tower to fall and make of thee a pyre of flame. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Oh, thou that dwell on many waters, rich in treasure, wide in fame. Bow unto a god of gold, thy pride of might shall be thy shame. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. And only God can lead the people back into the earth again. Thy holy mountain be restored, thy mercy on thy people.
And those of you that know a little bit about me know that on the spring solstice of 1998, which I found out in 2006 was the beginning of the week of 9-eek, which is my Mayan day sign, I woke up one morning and a voice told me, in the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc because the weather will become so bad it may even shut down computers all over the planet. And wake up and write that down. So I did. And one of the first people I interviewed was a one of the English spokesmen for the renewed Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. And I interviewed him in the following November. He sent me a link to, and it's on the website, to climatology, meaning UN climatologists. I had a meeting about the 2005 was the hottest year on record, and they categorized it as a year of weather havoc. And of course, he said, "Hey, you know, you were spot on." But I decided after Katrina, and this rabbi friend of mine, Rabbi Michael Barone, he landed in Houston the day Katrina hit, and to meet with the Noahide people there. And so I rewrote, this is my version of City of New Orleans, and with my software I stripped off the original voice and put my lyrics on it. This is City of New Orleans 2.
In 2005, Katrina let her rip, taking dead aim at the coast of Mississippi, causing death and devastation like no one had ever seen, and anger and frustration in the town of New Orleans.
I got to apologize. That's the wrong song. Mine, I got them mixed up on here, but I'll see if I can find it. But we'll get back on the air now. Sorry about that faux pas, but... I would like you all to hear that. Anyway, we're back on air with Lori. And sorry about that. But, yeah, there is a song out there called the Katrina Song, and I knew I had uploaded, City of New Orleans, and my version, but we'll play that a little bit later. What do you think of that Gordon Lightfoot song? Pretty good, huh? I guess they may have left to take a potty break. Hey, here is my version of City of New Orleans. Here, I found it.
Maryland down on the city of New Orleans. Category 5 and coming without fail. 3 days in hell, locked inside the Saints' Dome. This hurricane is way beyond the pale. All along her northbound odyssey, she bulldozed over Florida, rolling over houses, farms, and fields, tossing ships that had no names, freighters full of old scared men in graves. Politicians in the back room, a cadaver appointed, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the buck that holds the people's futures. It's a sin the winds are beating down the door. And the sons of fearsome pirates, and the sons of old Hickory, awesome price for their granddaddy's greed. Mothers with their babes asleep, suffering oppressive heat, and the rhythm of their wails is all you feel. Goodbye, down to the sea. All the towns and people were swept into the roaring stream, and the Superdome still ain't heard the news. The mayor sings his songs again, the evacuees will please refrain. This town's got the disappearing hurricane.
My version of the City of New Orleans. Probably should have brought the vocals up a little bit because the lyrics are a little bit hard to understand, but I think everybody gets the gist of what that was all about. And but anyway, Lori, Are you guys back, or did you disappear?
I am back. I am back, and in fact, I was before, but I just didn't want to interrupt you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I started playing the Katrina song. I haven't played this in quite some time, and it was a comical song. I went, oh, my gosh. But anyway, hey, yeah, go ahead. We've got about 15 minutes left. I wanted
to share some of these updated prophecies.
Sure.
Just because people always ask about them, and I think your audience would be interested in this. And I did a little meditation before the interview with you, and Saint Germain, of course, who is my master teacher, my guru. He thought I should really talk more about what's happening in California and what he sees as more of the updated information for there. Interestingly, in about 2005, same year as Katrina, I traveled to Los Angeles. I wanted to meet and get some hypnotherapy done by a practitioner that I really respected. And I hadn't been in Los Angeles for a long time. And when I drove in, all I could feel was water. And I saw a huge wave kind of coming at me as we drove along the freeway. So I think that in the future, there was at one time, or it's coming, will be some sort of tsunami, which is what we talked about earlier in the interview. But these prophecies that I'm going to give about California focus on what's happening due to global warming. And one thing that they talked about in these prophecies is the huge climate change. And so they say that we will have continuous fires all throughout California, primarily also in Southern California. And, of course, we're seeing that right now, that we're having a lot of these really drastic wildfires all over the whole West.
And that's also a Lakota prophecy you may not know about, but go ahead.
Yeah, and then also in Arizona as well. But that Mount Shasta will stay intact throughout all of the global changes, but they say a series of quakes may occur in California, but the most horrific quakes are activated by global warming by placing pressure on the tectonic plates. And first we may see the flooding of the inland of California. So that's one thing, again, you know, to look for as a marker.
Which happened before.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Because a lot of it is sea level when you go inland, a lot of California is. Tectonic shifts linked to California and Washington, Oregon, cause changes along the whole western coastline all the way up to British Columbia and then down to South America. So once those quakes start, I think it's going to be kind of difficult for the Earth to instantly recalibrate itself. I think we'll see a whole period of change. In fact, that's one thing I wanted to talk about, is that the times of changes could be as short as 5 years, but it could be as long as 2,000 years. And that this is a time period when Earth enters into that we will have many, many successive generations that will be born into the time of change. And this is the time where it's most drastic. And they say in the 200th year, during the most intense change, that a new mountain range will erupt in the central United States. And actually, the government did a survey of the United States and took infrared photography, and that you can actually see that photography and the research that they did. And that's on my website. That's called Deep Probe. And anyway, this mountain change extends from the United States down to Central America. But the interesting part about the time of change is that it's concurrent with this new spiritual energy that erupts throughout the planet, and this causes psychic phenomena, telepathy, and also forms unity consciousness. In the Pacific Northwest, of course, we don't hear a lot about it, but the Yellowstone caldera is allegedly, according to the spiritual teachers, it is a link to the Cascade Mountains. And they say to watch Mount Baker. And Mount Baker is always a very important mountain to watch in terms of what's happening with that, because that can tell you other things that could happen. And they say that the Yellowstone caldera will erupt during the time of change. So that's a very vulnerable area.
Yeah, Baker's the grandfather mountain. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah, Gustav said, you know, when you see a puff of smoke come out of there, get out of town because it's getting ready to start. And Yeah, the there was a woman that visited the Cardson Temple back in 1930, and she said that the Earth changes would begin in the Northwest.
Well, since of course the publication of the Yama America map, they've discovered that Cascadia subduction zone. Complete total fault line, you know, runs underneath. I think all of Seattle. It was even running under the Kingdom. That is now they've torn that down. But the problem with Seattle is that so much of Seattle is just not built for earthquake. Whereas a lot of the California cities adopted that standard a long time ago. So that's a real issue there. This is sort of fascinating, but they say that the Yellowstone caldera also assists the physical formation of the Cooperation Mountains. So some way Mount Baker to Yellowstone caldera to this new chain of mountains, they're all interconnected in the earth itself. Also, they say that the new coastline west extends into the states of Idaho and Utah. So they're still saying the same thing, that they still see Utah being part of the new coastline. Now, this is interesting. We'll go into the Southwest a little bit here. They say that in New Mexico that there's many underground caverns, and these are filled with natural gas and susceptible to explosion. And I think a lot of people who've studied kind of the archaeological mysteries of the Southwest know that so much of New Mexico and parts of Arizona are just riddled with these underground caverns. They say that Geronimo would enter in a kind of its area called Springerville, Arizona, would enter into a secret cavern there, travel and find an underground river, travel along the river, and then he'd come out near the Chiricahuas, which would be, 200 miles south. So there's a sort of an interesting geology that is all through there, and the natives knew which caverns to navigate, which ones had that natural gas in them, which ones did not. But the spiritual teachers say that many of them will explode and come on fire during the time of change.
Well, the Chigaragan Indians of Central Mexico, their prophecy, and this is written in Mary Meyer's book, The Great White Chief in the Valley of the Blue Moon. She said their signal to migrate up here is there'll be a tremendous fire and explosion that they'll see, down in Central Mexico. They're to wait a year and migrate up. And, of course, the entirety of North America is one big, huge, all the natural gas they pumped a lot of it back underground for storage people don't know how much natural gas there is underground, but it's both natural and put there by humans.
It's really amazing when you start to understand that there really is a life in the inner earth. And, in fact, so much of Oregon, of course, is basalt. And the alleged stories are, is that there's many underground caverns all throughout Oregon, all the way up to Idaho, that you can navigate out to the ocean.
Sure.
So it's kind of like a shelf that just lays over, from the North American continent.
And folks, I don't want to – let me interrupt you just for a second. When we get done here, I want to encourage everybody to go to manataka.org, manataka.org/page2224.html and read Standing Bear's Vision on the Mountain. And I'll just leave it at that. That's something everybody needs to read, because that's Lee Standing Bear Moore's vision of what's going to happen. But sorry to interrupt.
No problem. In the central states of Texas, this is an interesting prophecy. They talk about the salinity of the ocean waters changing, and this is because of the melting of the ice caps.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting all this fresh water that's moving into salt water. And they say that near Texas and onward into South America, that this will cause many massive weather changes in South America. And what they're probably talking about here is thermohaling, which is the ocean's conveyor belt.
Mm-hmm.
And just because this all controls all the temperatures and throughout the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
The sea. Houston and San Antonio, they still say, will be covered by ocean water, and Texas may see a new coastline up to 120 miles inland from the present-day coastline.
Yeah, I think only the hill country, where that's where Chief Rogers is, only the hill country will be left above water. I think 600 feet minimum elevation is where everybody ought to be. That's minimum.
What's the elevation again?
I believe a lot of people are saying 600, at least 600 feet above sea level.
In Texas or?
Just about anywhere. I would say in Texas, that's pretty much what Talks to White Buffalo saw. The West Coast, you know, sits on a magma bubble, so that could fall, and just kind of depends on where you are.
I think so.
You've got to be led by the spirit.
We were told at least 4,000 feet, but I live in Arizona.
Right.
So,
well,
there could be coastline, very close to here.
I think the safest place anybody could go is the San Luis Valley, because that's Valley Forest, 7,700 feet. It's guarded by four 10,000-foot mountain passes, and, goes all the way from north of Santa Fe up into south central Colorado, and that's a very sacred place. That's where Crestone is. I lived there for a year, and that's for sure. When Patrick Jarrell came out, with his website, I emailed him, and because he was looking around for places, and I said, "Hey, here's a good place for you." I said, even if the water washed in, to 10,000 feet, it wouldn't get into the San Luis Valley, the Sangre de Cristo range.
Otter, is that part of the Colorado Plateau?
No, it's not. It's up where Sipapu was, Alamosa, Crestone.
Okay.
It's kind of
interesting, because I've read some scientific data that the Colorado Plateau is said to be one of the most stable geologic formations in all of
mm-hmm.
America.
Which, of course, is
where the Hopi are at, so
mm-hmm,
there's a reason
mm-hmm.
why they're there.
Well, they say they're going to be flooded all the way up to Third Mesa, and that's
a
pretty
lot of water.
Hot. And I think it's going to depend on where you're at. The elders just said, get up in the mountains and forest, and forest, indicates a certain elevation. But most important thing is everybody needs to establish their own direct link with the Creator and start asking him, hey, number one, read the parable of the 10 virgins, decide if you're going to be a wise virgin or not, and make sure you got time to gather your oil, because the time will come when you won't be able to gather your oil and or your wisdom, and there will be no time. This is a spiritual muscle that you're trying to develop.
It's really about overcoming fear. It's about overcoming
right.
fear and living in the now, living in love in your center, and activating and working with your heart brain. That is your heart. They've actually discovered this too at the Heart Brain Institute, that your heart
right.
has cells that mirror the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you begin to think with your heart instead of your head, and
mm-hmm.
this is the time we're entering into. In the central states, now this is interesting, the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers and their tributaries nearly split the United States in half, so they still say that is probably going to happen. This is directly related to humanity's cultivation of compassion towards
mm-hmm.
one another. And this also has the potential to open all of humanity to a new vibration, because we unite through crisis. Crisis brings people together. The East Coast, they still are prophesying superstorms, and they say that superstorms may cause much death and destruction, and that many of the souls that leave will later return to Earth when there's a higher vibration and a higher consciousness on Earth. So,
uh-huh.
If we do enter into this time period, there will be a lot of death and destruction, but the good part about it is that we do reincarnate and we do come back, and so that's what they were talking about. They say in the East Coast, New England, and Canada, that we have colder weather than normal, and with these unseasonable seesawing seasons and the great winds that are prophesied to hit the entire East Coast. And the U.S. East Coast is especially vulnerable to climate change, and there'll be major changes in weather in Washington, D.C., New York City, Philadelphia, and Boston. And there'll be this drastic seesawing, for example, a cold July and a hot December.
Mm-hmm.
And,
like Noah, I said, my winter and summer are all mixed up, yeah.
Yeah, all mixed
hey,
up.
Laurie.
Everything is all mixed up.
Kind of real quick on it, you had the I Am America map, but you had the world map, too. Is the
world
in general...
The is currently being reprinted, so that will be available again very soon. And I also want to mention...
Is the world maps changed very much, or is it pretty much the same?
It's pretty much the same. I think now what we're looking at is, can our consciousness shift here with us, with humanity? And if it can, then I think we can hold these things off and lessen them. This is sort of fascinating. My husband and I have been working on building a community, a sustainable community, in one of the golden cities. And Mother Karunamai, who is a realized avatar of India, actually is hoping to establish a meditation retreat in one of our communities. And we showed Mother the maps, I'm America map and the six map scenario, and she said that if we continue in our meditation and in our spiritual practice, that the worst that it will get is probably map number one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some relief for us, but that's still a lot of coastlines that will be underwater.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like birth pangs. They can be easy or hard depending on, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah, and there's really kind of two different theories on Earth changes that, you know, some people say, well, we need to hold them back so that we have time to evolve and to grow and to accept these new energies. And then there's another group altogether that says, bring it on, you know, tabula rasa, new day. So
mm-hmm.
there's two different ways you can kind of work with it. Now, these are some interesting prophecies, and I'd like to talk about these just before we go, because it's not so much how it's said and what is said. It's what is not said. Sometimes there's a lot of subtle information in what's not said. But these are about the migrations of people. I thought this was kind of fascinating. And they say that basically there'll be four migrations of people into these new populated centers. And some of them will go into Golden City. Some will just, you know, be in other areas of the United States. But they say as the Baja Peninsula erodes, that this predicates a new wave of population migration, and the migrations move first through Arizona and then into New Mexico. And then as more people leave California due to global warming and climate change, migrations continue into Utah, Arizona, and Colorado. So on migration number two, Utah is still here. Thought that was fascinating. Migration three, as Earth experiences changes in oceanic currents, likely again the thermohaline, migrations of the United States East Coast begin, and many of these people migrate inland to Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana. And many people from New York and Washington, D.C. migrate to these areas and help to form the nexus of many bright and thriving sustainable agricultural-based communities. And then migration number four is the East Coast migrations will also establish on the southern and eastern sides of the Great Lakes regions. But the warning is that Lake Michigan is also prophesied to flood or to break, and I think that might be related to the New Madrid fault line. But that's all they gave us on migrations, and I thought it was interesting because they don't talk about much of a migration process from the Pacific Northwest, nor do they talk about a migration process from the Southeast United States.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, yep, that's really interesting. If you're done on the way out, I'd like to play. It's 15 minutes long, but it's a NASA employee that was, you know, speaking about, you know, what was spoken of and, you know, back in the 60s and what might, you know, possibly be dealing with possibly, you know, this star, the planet, or whatever people want to call it. But when you're ready to go, let's just go do that. Do you think you're done?
Well, I just want to leave the listeners with some hope. I mean, after all, it is about unity consciousness, isn't it?
Sure.
And it is the one ship, honestly, that is our saving grace. We all need one another in these perilous times. But I want to talk about what I see really in all of these teachings, from A Teacher Appears to the New World Atlas series to Golden City series, where the divine intervention is, because I do believe that will help us much along the way. And
uh-huh.
These are how I see the divine intervention during the earth changes. First, I see the Golden Cities as having great potential and opportunity to change this for great good. Also, as I said before, unity consciousness, the one-ship. As we evolve and grow and we're able to move beyond individualized consciousness and be able to move into group effort, into group mind, there can be great changes that can happen through that process. And then last but not least, and the masters talk a lot about this, and I think there are a lot of other channels who also describe this, but it's the birth of those newly, highly evolved souls who will come to Earth, the new children. And they carry, many of them are coming in right now, and they carry a very high energy, and I think they're helping us right now to make this transition.
Well, we're going to need them.
Oh, we're
really
going to
need them, absolutely. And, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, when you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should, it says, don't just stop what you're doing and flee to the mountains. And oddly enough, anciently, Neolithic men in cold climates lived on mountaintops because they found their communities, and they thought down in the valleys it was colder and the warmer air and the sun was up on the mountaintops. So just a few hints of what you might do if you do survive and want to move on. And I think a lot of us we're physically unable to, and but there's the young ones out there that who knows, a lot of us will move on, and there will be some that'll be here to begin again.
Well, they say that they're coming from all over the galaxy to help Earth now in her evolution.
Sure.
To grow and to spiritually evolve at this important time.
Sure, sure they are. Well, we appreciate you being on.
Oh, it was a pleasure, and so nice to meet both of you, and I appreciate the reading too, Mark. And I did want to mention to your listeners that if they go to LoriToy.org, they can get a free audio version of A Teacher Appears. You just have to leave your email.
I put a link on this on this show's page. There's a link to your website.
That's terrific.
And to your book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, sure.
And, of course, they can go to LoriToy.com, and that's more of an information-driven site, so they can get a lot of information on the Golden Cities. They can read all the prophecies. I've got most of them posted up there. So there's a lot of material there for those who want to learn a little bit more.
And a cool video, too, not to mention.
Thank you. Yes. Enjoyed working on that.
Hey, we'll let you go. And,
okay, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much. And, folks, I'm going to play, this is just a NASA employee that was speaking out about what he learned when he was working for NASA. And after that, we'll end the show. Good night, guys. I'll go ahead and hang you up now.
Yeah, good night.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space, because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, like, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, like, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went in and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone, and this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it, and I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street, and we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction, and you could see the planets circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully nothing in this mess will hit us, even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible. It says we can expect all kinds of problems. We were looking at asteroids right close to this thing. There's asteroids that are floating around right near the, that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across, and as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud, and you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will talon 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing. This thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, it's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail, and if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay? Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay, well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it, and until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We knew, we could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud, but as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to could tell how hot it is. I was told that it was, they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees, but, you know, I don't really know, if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it.
Right.
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings, because, you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us. Listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They'll lose their, they won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on, because this thing will gut their brain. And, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens that nobody will care because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong, because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant kicked the Earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told, 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck, so that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are, because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy, that this could happen. And it very easily could gut everybody's brain for everything they ever knew, and they'll stand there and pee in their pants and go, gee, what was that? And that's if they still know how to talk. And there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind, because this thing's going to look like a big red dragon, exactly like all the ancient Sumerians and the Chinese and all the rest of them that had documented this thing's passing before. It didn't look like a white ball or a snow cloud or nothing. It looked like a big red iron oxide dust cloud with a superheated star in the middle of it. And, I mean, you know, and that's what we've seen. So, you know, I don't care what anybody else says. There's a possibility. There's more than one thing out there. You know, I watched it through the Hubble Space Telescope. And when this thing looked like it was across the street, the Hubble got cut off and they encrypted it. And that was the end of any transmissions we had to watch. And we know that the Hubble, in order to be in the shadow of the Earth, had to be at an angle, and so that meant it was looking downward,
right.
And this thing was coming up underneath of us, and I tell you the honest to God truth, I personally think this thing is real close to us right now, but, you know, that's just my general feeling that, you know, and I'm a pretty psychic guy, I have the feeling that this thing is right close by and that we're going to see it any time. I mean, I've been doing everything I could do to get prepared for it to... I'm really worried about what Jesus says. You know, when the fig tree is putting on its leaves, know that summer is near and I'm at your door. And that worries me more than probably anything I've read in the Bible about this whole thing, the parable of the fig tree, because everything seems to be in place for this thing's arrival. And the bad thing is, he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, it does also say in the Bible that I'm going to make the sun go down at noontime in Jerusalem. Okay, if that's the case, there's only one thing that'll make the sun go down, not hit the horizon, down, go down at noontime, and that's if the planet experiences a pole shift.
Okay, I got a quick question that you can probably answer really quickly and then continue from the chat room. Wants to know if you're talking about Planet X or Elenin, and I've never thought Elenin is Planet X. Terrell's pretty
well,
stuck on that, but
is.
I think Elenin is a result of it. It's a comet that's been kicked in.
Elenin is extinction level event. Nibiru is near.
Right.
Does that explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, because listen, they've known about this thing forever. And I mean, they've known about it forever. I mean, if I read about it in a science magazine in 1961, that tells you that, I mean, it's only 1,800 years away. How could they not be able to see it when it came around the backside of the last sun and headed this way?
Right, right.
You have to know they've been watching it, because if you know, Carl Sagan was showing stuff that they took with their old telescopes that was billions and billions of miles away, and this thing's only 1,800 years away. Well, and by 1930, it was only 70 years away. You know, we do estimate that this thing, let me give you a thing, maybe you can figure out your own timeline. We estimated that this thing is traveling around 3,500 miles an hour, okay?
Okay.
That was our estimate of its speed. Now, it has been picking up speed, and that's the reason why we think it's going to arrive early, because when it comes around the backside of the sun, it's got to double that speed in order to attain breakaway speed to leave the sun and not wind up orbiting it. It's never orbited the sun in the past that we know of, so that means that it's going to have to attain breakaway speed to head back out into space. Now, you look at the NASA videos, photos, and all this other crap those morons put on the internet. This thing is coming in. It's going to, as soon as it goes around the top of the sun, it's going to go back out into space.
Right.
And it's going to do this really fast. When it goes past us, it's going to go past us so fast that we'll almost have no time to get ready. That's my opinion. But, you know, just drawing it out on paper a few times and thinking about it, and I went, you know, if this thing picks up enough speed to make breakaway speed, then that means it's going to come past us. You know, this thing, according to what I was told, is that this thing is approximately 47,000 miles in diameter, you know, four or five times the size of the Earth, and it'll come past us, and we won't have a lot of warning, and we won't get to see it in the sky until it's on us. I think the NASA timeline is completely off. I think this thing's going to arrive much earlier than they say it is. You know, I know they're saying October, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, now, I was told that the poles are not shifting at 42 miles a year. They're shifting at 42 miles a day. And the reason is because this planet is rolling over to face this thing. Now, when it goes by, it's not going to push our north pole away. It's going to grab our southern pole with its northern pole. And it's going to be like somebody kicked this planet in the ass, that earthquake that it talks about in Revelations when the opening of the sixth seal comes. From what I've been told, that's very accurate, because that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive earthquake when it locks onto us. As it goes past us, we're going to follow it right upside down. The oceans are just going to be roaring from pole to pole, as you could well guess they would, because if you take a planet that's 7,000 miles across and roll it upside down in 30 minutes, you're going to have some real serious problems with wind and water. We should be preparing to expect this thing to show up.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. The very sexy, very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. immediate 25% fuel savings with gasmojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The gasmojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The gasmojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with gasmojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Let the truth be known. mankind again. Let the wind blow, let the truth